Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Got an interesting topic for you today, one that's hot in the press right now, which is the contract situation of David Ajabo, the Ravens' second-round draft pick this year. Joining me to talk about it is the best man for the job, Brian McFarland. Brian, how are you doing?
Good, Ken. How's everything been?
Life's always good, especially when I'm talking to you, my friend. And when we have a contract issue, or we want to understand certain designations or rules about contracts, you are the guy to bring on. And this is a fairly complex situation with David Ajabo, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because obviously the injury, they wouldn't have had a chance to draft him if he wasn't injured, but certainly in the second round. But once he was injured, he dropped. You got to figure the connection with Mike McDonald played into the drafting some. Obviously, all the Michigan Maryland connections, not just the former defensive coordinator there. But it creates a situation of you get into guaranteed money, and with the Ravens try to hold some of that back, and they obviously how the injury affects this year and the future years as well.
Let's talk about the NFI designation, if we can, to start with, because that's been brought up as a possible tool in this contract. Now, no designation was made for him. There's been no PUP designation for him, although the Ravens made their PUP list up with six players. Would that have been an option for Ajabo?
Yeah, I mean, whenever he returns, I mean, they've got, I guess, really four options. Put him on IR and end his season now. Put him on PUP. Or put him on NFI, and there's distinctions there, and then obviously other is he starts active, which he clearly, given the injury, it just being in March, that's not going to happen.
Okay, so he still is eligible to be put on a PUP, even though the initial PUP list had to be handed to the league just because he hasn't practiced yet?
Right, because he hasn't officially arrived at training camp. I mean, he's technically, I guess you can call him a holdout, even though a holdout is usually somebody who has a contract and then doesn't show up. But at this point, he's AWOL, whatever you want to call it, until the contract is signed, but they could make that designation at that time.
Okay, so the NFI designation, an interesting one, and let's talk about what its implications are before you go back to some really famous examples of this, and some have crossed the path of the Ravens, like a black cat here over the years. But tell us a little bit about what that designation is and what it means.
Sure, so the NFI is what is called the non-football injury list. That is for players who get injured away from the practice facility, or obviously get injured in some non-football way. And unfortunately for rookies, it can mean guys that had injuries prior, even if it was an injury last season during football, even though it wasn't technically a football injury, it's not an NFL football injury. So NFI is for those kinds of players.
Okay, so I just want to bring up an example or two. So if you're in the facility, it's during the season, you beat the crap out of the vending machine because your ho-hos didn't come out, you could potentially be put on the NFI list for that?
Yes, because it would be a non-football injury, yes.
All right, and then if you are out at a restaurant and it's the off-season and anything happens, you swallow something wrong or whatever and you can't play, also, obviously, an NFI anytime. And if you're playing pickup football in the backyard in the offseason, that also is not protected.
Correct. Yeah, and some players have contracts. You know, Ben Roethlisberger could not be on a motorcycle, after his severe injury. That would be NFI if he got injured that way, certainly.
Interesting.
Yes.
So do you think there are a lot of those kind of dangerous hobbies restrictions around the NFL?
I think you have to show, I think you probably, it's not a standard, so I think it's something you probably have to show that you need to be told otherwise, or it could hurt you. You could look at the Kyler Murray kind of thing with his studying for 4 hours that was in his new contract, and the whole idea that clearly somebody in that building doesn't feel he studies hard enough. So it's sort of along those lines. Those are very rare, unless, again, I mean, that wasn't in his rookie deal, but now obviously something's happened over his first 3 years that have shown that he needs that incentive.
So what I know about from insurance contracts is they would typically exclude things like skydiving or or other dangerous sports. Would that just be in a normal NFL contract?
There is some language, but it's vague. Dangerous is probably too strong of a word, but any kind of dangerous activity that could result in blah 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 blah. I don't know the exact language, but there is some broad stuff, but that would not necessarily apply to everything, you know.
Okay, and so once this NFI designation is on a player, then what are the repercussions of that? What happens to the player and his pay and whatnot?
Sure. So obviously, any bonus he's already received is not affected. As far as his salary goes, the team can pay him his salary. They can pay him half of his salary. They can pay him none of his salary. That is up to the team, and that's in the team's discretion. It depends on who the player is. I think in our history lesson coming up, Terrell Suggs will come up, but he was fully paid. Now he was a superstar, if you're a guy like, David Ajabo, maybe not. It's a question of, he could have been a first rounder. Are they going to kind of respect that? If he was a seventh rounder and went on NFI, I feel very strongly he would not be paid for the season.
Mm-hmm. Even though it wouldn't be that much of a savings, honestly, in that particular
case.
Well,
no, in the end, no.
Okay. So the other repercussion of NFI that we were talking a little bit about on Twitter today or yesterday, I don't remember which day it was that if he does not come onto the roster for at least 6 games, he does not get a year of service time. Is that correct? And can you explain kind of how his contract would toll under those situations?
Sure. So to be a free agent, unrestricted free agent to sign and with any team, you need 4 accrued seasons. You get an accrued season by being on IR or obviously the 53-man roster. If you're on the roster for 6 games, if you go NFI, is exempt from that. So if he were to be put on NFI now and not return, and of course the Ravens would, short of this being addressed by his agent, which I would assume he would, this would basically set it up so that he could not accrue a season. So I'm sure that's going to be a point of the negotiations of, if he gets to the last 6 games and he's still on NFI, his agent's going to want something in the contract saying that they'll put him on IR and therefore he gets his accrued season. I mean, the Ravens, they'd probably rather, if it has to be on NFI the whole year, they'd probably rather have him be a restricted free agent in 4 years as opposed to an unrestricted free agent. So, but that's a negotiating point. My guess is, because they're known as a pretty player friendly organization, my guess is they would probably put language in like that. I don't think that's something they're going to, I don't think that's the reason for the holdout. Let's put it that way.
Right. Now, one of my complaints about the pick in general was that losing that first year of the player is such a significant value. And I think you and I would tend to agree that a very high percentage of the value of drafting someone comes in their initial contract. After that, you have to pay market value. There are some frictions built in, the franchise tag and, the RF, the compensatory pick that you can get. But basically, you've really got to get the value out of that player in their first 4 years, the value above cap.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And that's why, when you look back at Lamar Jackson, the Ravens didn't trade to 33 or 34. They traded to 32, being the last pick of the first round, so they could get that fifth year, which obviously we're experiencing right now. So, but second round picks and beyond, there's nothing like that. It's a straight 4-year deal. So that was why I was kind of surprised. And obviously he lasted probably longer than I thought, but I thought some team, especially a couple of those teams that had 2 first-round picks would, or some team would move up into the late second and pick him there, because then they would get that extra, quote unquote, extra year. Obviously none of those teams thought that was worth it. So whether that speaks to his injury, or as you're pointing out, that really if he does miss the year, or you know, only comes back at the end, you know, you only have him under team control for 3 years after that. Of course, franchise tag could come along, but that's that big jump. And obviously that's not cheap, especially for an edge rusher. So, So, I mean, I think that's certainly true. And it's just a question of, will they, they obviously drafted him, so they thought it was worth it. So,
right. And you made the point earlier that they wouldn't have had the chance to draft him otherwise. I'm always hesitant for that sort of thing. But maybe more importantly than losing the year in terms of play, we've seen just in recent years the losing the developmental year and how serious that can be for a player. Patrick Queen, you know, the excuses have been made a couple times about, you know, hey, he didn't have a first-year training camp because of COVID. And he'd only been playing the position for a little bit of time. And so there are multiple layers of this mm-hmm. that kind of restrict it. And that's not anywhere close to losing a full season.
Right.
That it would be for a Jabo. And, an unpolished player, definitely in terms of what he brings as a pass rusher. Not the full set of moves that you'd hope he would develop. It's been one of my things that I've been talking about all season is I really hope he can still develop while injured right. in terms of what he can learn as a pass rusher.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about some famous NFIs of the past, because, you know, I was thinking about it. I know we made our list before the show, but there's one other we forgot, and it's really famous because he stayed there the whole year. Corey Vedvik.
Oh, right. Right. Yes. And, that was a classic NFI. Yes. Yes.
So somebody didn't really fully inform that guy about where the safe places to be in Baltimore and whatnot.
Obviously. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I grew up in the city, and this is someplace he went to a place he definitely shouldn't have been, and maybe he was set up, maybe not, but whatever the situation, he ended up paying for it by losing a year, basically being on NFI. Then the Ravens managed to trade him before the next season, and extracted some significant value from Minnesota, who cut him, and I believe he's been through about 6 or 7 organizations since then.
I remember he ended up with the Jets at one point, but yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Obviously, he's never stuck, and that was might go down as one of the best, since NFL trades aren't that huge or that often, but that might go down as one of the Ravens' best trades ever.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, the best trade for a fifth rounder. It would have been. Yes. It was one of those ones. I was I was hoping would end up being a Hall of Famer they draft with the pick. But I don't remember who it was. I remember hearing the call and DaCosta saying it, but I don't remember who he was talking to. But it was one of the fifth round guys in 2020, was it? Hard for me to remember the exact year at this point.
Yes, because he would have been traded the year September before, so it may have been 21. Well, let's look it up.
All right, we can figure that out another time. So, getting back to Ajabo's contract, is there any way the Ravens can effectively negotiate for an extra year, or negotiate with Ajabo that, hey, if you can't play this year, we're going to leave you on NFI, but we're going to make it up to you by giving you an additional signing bonus?
No, they cannot do that. The rookie wage scale is locked in that it's, you know, four-year deals for first round picks with the fifth year option on top, and then all other deals are 4-year deals. So they really can't add an year on the end until later in the deal.
Let me clarify the question.
Okay.
Because I'm not sure I got it all the way done. If the Ravens are looking at Ajabo right now, I assume they're free to give him whatever the signing bonus they want, right? The salary scale is locked in. But the signing bonus can be whatever they want, right?
Well, I mean, the signing bonuses are pretty much slotted as well. I mean, technically, you're not required to give it all in signing bonus. I guess you could give it more in certain years, but the players aren't going to be happy about that because the signing bonus is the only thing that they was the first thing they get, obviously, and it's a big chunk of change. So,
okay, let's work by example then, because I really want to get through this question. So, if a typical second round pick might get a signing bonus of what, a couple million?
Yeah, I mean, they're looking at bonuses of so in Ajabo's. Let's just use because of the slotting, we know what his total compensation should be. And we know what the bonus would have normally been. So the total compensation would be just under $8 million at $7.909 million. So that's the total. The signing bonus, the slotted signing bonus, is $2.932. So that's what it would normally be. Now, he's going to want that. The player's going to want that. The Ravens, yes, it would be nice to put more money in the back years just in case. And obviously, if you reduce the signing bonus, you reduce the your dead money exposure down the road. And then, of course, there's a question of obviously guarantees. And that's what at least a couple of the reports have been what the sticking point is.
I'm going the other direction on this. Okay. So here's the question is really this. Can I buy an extra year on the back end by giving him a signing bonus of $4 million or $5 million instead of whatever his starting signing bonus would be? Then NFIing him for 12 weeks or 13 weeks this year, which is within their right. They could pay him his whole salary for the time as well. And then he would be a UFA in year five. Is there a way I can structure the contract that way so that I get the 4 years of actual play out of Ajabo, even if it's at an increased cost?
No, because again, the way the rookie wage scale is and the way the CBA is, all second year or all second round picks and after get a four year deal, period. So you okay. Can't really structure anything, can't add anything on. The only add on is that fifth year option for the first rounders.
Okay, I'm sure you can get there, and I'll try not to be obtuse, but I understand the Ravens only have actual control over him for 4 years, and then he would have a UFA in year five if he's NFI'd for say 12, 13 weeks here. So the question is, in terms of getting this contract done, so that they can get him signed, and I don't even know what the other side of this is, but if they could get him signed with the understanding that he would be on NFI and lose the season of service time,
lose the accrued year, but
instead he gets a $5 million bonus instead of whatever would be the normal slotting bonus.
No, because the slotting, I had to look at the math, but he's there's basically a max amount that his cap number can be this year under the rookie cap, the year one okay. allocation. And then there's also the maximum that it can be. So I don't think there's a way. I mean, you could do it, but he's still going to lose some money in year one. And he's already getting the minimum, so it can't be. That's all he can get, but that's all you could allocate there. So you'd have to take. I don't think the player is going to want that. And two, I'm not sure that if it fits a loophole, I'm not sure the Players Association will just roll over on that because. Obviously, getting players to free agency is their job. I mean, their main job, really. So I totally understand what you're saying. And if the player went along with it, you just basically still structure the contract as it's structured, and because you can only reduce it down to 795. That's as low as you could reduce his number because that's the minimum. So you have to put a minimum in. So then when you structure the rest of it, it's still the same. However you allocate the money, it's still the same amount of money over the 4 years.
Okay.
Now you could reason them. Now maybe you could say, I'll guarantee all 4 years, which second round picks, that's apparently they're fighting over how much of the third year is being guaranteed. So, I mean, I guess you could say we'll give you a fully guaranteed 4 year deal like all the first round picks have, but we're going to put you on NFI, and then you'll get paid commensurately with restricted free agent in your essentially your fifth year. But I don't see. I'm not sure the agent's going to go for that either.
Okay, it's an interesting idea whether there's a way to structure the contract. But what you're telling me about some of the maximums and the slottings, I guess, is where the math would fit in.
Yeah,
that might not allow that. And I'd like to go over that with you in a spreadsheet, but I guess on the show is not really the best place to do it anyway.
Sure, sure.
A really interesting topic, and I appreciate you bringing the knowledge, because there's no one else who could go through this, I think, and answer these questions so thoroughly and so thoughtfully as you can. I really appreciate that.
Sure.
Let's go back though and talk about some other NFI designations from over the year. Because Corey Vedvik, we talked about Ben Cleveland now, apparently just gone on NFI today, and we're recording this on the 27th. I hope you'll be hearing this on the 28th. What do you know about that?
I mean, this seems to happen to begin every year, first day of training camp, a couple guys go on NFI. Usually it's the bigger guys. Every once in a while, you get a running back or a corner who goes on NFI, and there's, oh gosh, what's going on? It's usually because they didn't get to they didn't pass their conditioning test, which by all reports, the Ravens' conditioning test is way more difficult than most teams. So I'm assuming that's it. If he passes the next couple of days, he comes back off NFI. Like I said, it fits the timing, since we've heard nothing about any injury or any problems. Didn't he just get married? I think he just there were posted pictures. So unless something happened on the honeymoon, I imagine that it'll be short lived one way or another.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. And I remember Lardarius Webb failing the conditioning test.
That was a big surprise
to us. Yeah. When we look back just about less than a month, I think, to the resolution of the Wolf contract, and Derek Wolf, obviously, there was some posted video of him, I believe, hunting.
Carrying a bear, like, which I'm not a bear hunter, but people said was at least several hundred pound bear. Yeah. And it goes to show that, if you do or say anything wrong on social media, somebody's going to find it, and of course this one wasn't even, he was putting it right out there. So, and then what, 2 months later, he announced he's having hip surgery on his other hip after having hip surgery back in January on, I don't know which was right or left, first or second. But it set it up for, the Ravens to use that as a way of avoiding his $3 million base salary. So they could have done it that way, but they could release him that way with that designation and then refuse to pay the guaranteed money, or they could resolve it. And I guess that Wolf social media history didn't come to benefit him much, so they cut it down. I think they still paid him about $1.3 million, or was it just a million? I don't recall. I've forgotten already. They cut it back somewhere in the middle. So
1.2 million. I don't remember if it's 1.2 million saved or 1.2 million they actually paid him out of what he was due. And it might have been 1.3 they paid him out of maybe 2.5 or something, might have been right. But anyway, I think you nailed it on the middle. So it's just an injury settlement. Those happen all the time with players who might otherwise go to IR, but still want to continue their football careers and not be on IR for their whole first year.
Right.
All right. So There we go on that. If you go back a few years, when Jason Pierre-Paul, who was incredibly just in to try out for the Ravens this offseason, had the accident with the fireworks.
Yes,
where
that's
he
right.
lost a couple of fingers.
Yes.
I don't remember if that ended up being an NFI, but that certainly could have been the.
I'm pretty sure it would have been. Now, whether they paid him, I want to say they might have restructured his deal in some way, because they could have cut him. And I think at that point, I think it was, you know, I'd like to stay around and nobody's going to take a risk on me right now anyway. So it's better to take a little, you know, take the haircut this year and hope to make it up down the road. But at least I'm not sitting on the sideline without a team.
Right. My recollection of this was there was some other absolutely cosmic, strange thing. Like he had been franchise tagged by the team, and if he came into the facility to sign his franchise tender, then there was something about they would be able to do a physical on him, and then he would fail that, and then they might NFI him. And so his agent was telling him, "Don't sign your tender, just negotiate."
Right.
That's just what weird, but. There's a lot more going on behind the scenes. I'm glad we have people like you to talk about with us, Brian. All right. What else did we miss? Anything else on the NFI designations that we should be talking about while we have you here?
No, I mean, the other one was obviously last year, Juwan James was NFI. He did not get paid all year. That was sort of because he injured his hamstring or Achilles the year working out. The May before, but on his own, not even though he's working out for the season to, you know, to be ready, but he wasn't at the training facility. So therefore it was NFI Denver cut him. And then obviously the Ravens came up with a pretty clever way of doing it. They did give him a $500,000 signing bonus, which he did get immediately. So that counted 250 grand last year on the cap. And then, you know, they gave him a minimum base salary for last year, but because of NFI, and since he never returned, he never got paid. So, but that was kind of the plan all along. He got 500 grand to, you know, rehab and be ready for this year. So, you know, we'll see what happens this year, but actually his salary is relatively modest if he's if they consider him a quality enough backup or, you know, pinch starter or whatever they would need.
Right, so I think he's only making like $3 million this year.
Yeah, so it's certainly reasonable, even as a backup tackle or swing tackle or whatever.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, outstanding, Brian. Always a pleasure to have you on any topic, but certainly on a topic like this where it's right in your wheelhouse. We really appreciate it. Tell folks where they can talk to you on Football Online and otherwise read your work.
Yeah, sure. So you can find me on Twitter at Raven Salary Cap. I'm there. I'm trying to keep things updated as quickly as we have information. My articles and, you know, if you need the most updated Ravens cap space, it's on Russell Street Report on the cap page. And like I said, that's updated as soon as information's available. And then articles and, you know, I'll be doing a training camp, you know, what all these bunch of, you know, as far as when waivers can happen and things like that. And, you know, when the cutdowns happen. So I'll have an article on that. And then during the season, obviously, if there's a big, you know, trade or something like that, or a release, then, you know, I'm there to give you the information.
All right. Fantastic, Brian. Great having you on. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up with a DM on Twitter. I'd love to hear from you. Nice narrow topic we can get into in 25 or 30 minutes. And hopefully narrower the better. And we get into it in good depth that way. And I'd love to hear from you. We'll talk. We'll hit you back up right away. Brian, thanks again for coming on.
Sure, Ken. Anytime.
We'll talk to you next time.
Sounds good.
On Film Study.